Hello, good morning. You're very welcome to the programme. Between now and nine, taking the temperature of farming in Offaly, making a plan in Kilkenny, new vet schools in Waterford and Donegal, and treating farm animals as Gaeilge in Galway. A very good morning to you, Minister Martin Hayden, Minister for Agriculture.
Morning, Philip.
Wet old drive up from Kildare. Thank you very much for joining us in studio this morning.
Nice autumnal day.
We ran a town hall discussion in the RTE tent at the ploughing. Several hundred turned up to it, and we talked about all of the hot button issues in farming that are on your desk right now. I'd like to play some of it to you, and then we'll get your thoughts off the back of what it is that you hear. I asked at the start a few questions to gauge the general mood in farming. Unfortunately, it wasn't good.
How many of you are optimistic about the future for farming if you try and look 15, 20 years over the horizon? Oh, lads, four hands in the entire room. How many people don't see their successors or their family continuing in farming? Well, that's depressing now. Who wants to tell me why?
I have two young sons, 22 and 24, and just a small farm, but they have absolutely no interest in it. And I suppose they see myself not making a full-time job out of it. I'm working full-time somewhere else, and the farm's just part-time, and they've gone on to do other things and have no interest in it. I tried to make a go of it. Like I say, it's only a small farm and couldn't survive on it, so I had to get a full-time job elsewhere.
If I was to sum it up, Minister, I think what we heard is that because they're not dealing with the immediate impact of something like a poor harvest, people are able to take a look over the horizon and they don't see like what they see, because what they see is governments around Europe, government in Ireland, not backing up rhetoric with money in a way that makes farming a good long-term sustainable bet.
Well, look, you make the point about Europe, and generation renewal is very much a challenge for us in Ireland in farming and agriculture, but it's not unique to Ireland. You know, we know that 4.35% of farmers under 35 and some 37% of farmers over 65 tells you all you need to know around the challenges that are in that space. There are loads of contributing factors to that, and not least listening to that farmer there, I think his two children in their 20s have got an amazing education in this country. Have come out of college at a time where the country's at full employment with ample other opportunities and balanced regional development, meaning that those opportunities aren't just in Dublin or in Galway or in Cork. They're foreign direct investment opportunities, well-paying jobs in a host of different areas. So that's all competing.
Okay, but unfortunately, of government policy and market conditions, which means that the family farm is no longer the asset that it once was.
Well, obviously, like, the next generation as well have a different expectation of a quality of life in a good way. You know, unlike the generation before, the next generation of young farmers aren't willing to accept 365 days of the year without a holiday.
Good news for them, bad for farming.
Yeah, but look, there is a challenge to that, and there's ways around that, but also there's quality of the work that's there. So look, the report on generation renewal that we published this week from the Independent Commission, and I want to thank them for their work on this, really lengthy report, 180 pages, 31 different recommendations, gets the nub of the issue that there isn't one single contributing factor here, and highlights that even though after you've looked at the issue around cap supports and income, pensions, the taxation system, access to finance, access to land, collaborative arrangements, advisory services around education and training, gender balance, making sure the next generation of young girls have as much a chance to inherit the farm as young boys, and the overall attractiveness of the sector. At the heart of that report, the biggest line that jumped out to me was the line that said, at the end of the day, the decisions that are made around succession on any given farm, the most important conversation that will happen will still be around the kitchen table, with all of the sensitivities that that brings between siblings or where there's not an identified successor.
I'm going to skip ahead to the part of that town hall conversation now that dealt with succession and with generational renewal. And what came out of the meeting was that there is nothing, that people see that there is nothing on the table now that is going to adequately address the over, what I'm calling the overlap period, when an older farmer can't afford to retire, but the farm can't afford to properly pay the successor and two salaries.
How many people in the room farming are under the age of 40? Hands up. Oh dear. Well, that tells its own story, doesn't it? Let's raise the age bar a little bit. How many people in the room farming under the age of 50? One, two, three, four, okay. A little bit under a dozen or so. How many in the room between the ages of 55 and 75 that are farming? Hands up, please. Okay, see, that tells its own story, doesn't it? That is the majority of people in active farming.
The way I look at it is if the average age of a farmer now is 60 years of age, which their sons is coming 35 years of age now, and you carry on for another 10 years, they're 45. Sure, the farm is nearly no use to them. I would like to see some sort of a subsidy or some way, yeah, some sort of an incentive. For.
Are you farming a farm that wouldn't, for that crunch 10 or 15 year period where you'd still be on it and your son would be on it, are you farming a farm that wouldn't generate enough for two incomes?
No, off two incomes. It wouldn't be big enough, like, you know, that have to, no.
So what do you do?
Either hold on to it or I have to lease it to someone else, you know what I mean? This is the thing. If I lease it to my own son, I'm taxed on it, so it's not viable for me. I don't think it'd be viable for him either. What about ourselves? You know what I mean? We'd been farming all our life. We need a good income, like, at the end of our years.
Hands up again, please. Everybody in the room who's farming in any way, shape or form. Keep your hand up if you have a succession plan in place. Oh dear. Oh dear, 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 dear. That's not good.
My son has an off-farm job, so he will take over in time, but I mean, he's 40 years of age. If there was more finance in it for the primary producer, the old chap might be able to have a bit of a nest egg for himself, and the young fella be able to take over a lot sooner. It's not a great incentive to leave a good job.
It strikes me that an awful lot of the things that you see as remedies here are contained within CAP, and the timeline before any of that is implemented is about 2 years out from now. So that's another 2 years in which the average age is only going to get even older before you start to address the problem.
Well, that's the way a lot of farmers would feel. But that's if you look at it purely through the prism of money and just a lump sum. Like, you know, I'm not convinced that the problem and the range of challenges we face here will be resolved by one lump sum in one area. Like, already we have a very attractive support system financially, one of the most attractive in Europe, in terms of €400 million worth of supports going into support succession.
So what are you saying? That the difficult conversation needs to be had around the kitchen table?
But, like, we have instances where some farms don't have an identified successor, and down the road you have the next generation young farmer who, like, they are saying there's not enough income from our farm to make that happen. So, like, there are ways we should be able to look at marrying those two together to see if the farmer with no identified successor and the young farmer down the road who doesn't have enough work or income from their own farm to sustain a full-time role there. That is one element. But the point around the supports that exist at present, €325 million per annum of taxpayers' money is going through our taxation system and support and succession at the minute through the agricultural reliefs that I'm working very hard to make sure we maintain in the next budget. There is a lot of finance there. Absolutely, the next CAP is the vehicle for developing a succession scheme. But I don't want people who are close to succession now hanging on
and not take the decision.
2-3 years of inertia.
Okay.
Because ultimately here, there is a lot that we can do. And I'm hoping in this budget to look at the structural things that we can do as well in the short term, as well as recognising that a large succession
scheme.
Are you
minded towards lots of little small things, or perhaps towards the one big kind of silver bullet solution, something like what the Swiss did, telling the older farmer, you can have your pension or you can have your farm payments, but you can't have both?
Yeah, so Commissioner Hansen would have proposed that in his proposals for the next cap, where he, and he's also talked about increasing expenditure on generation renewal from 3% to 8%.
If you were to introduce it here, it might work, but my God, it'd be unpopular.
Yeah, I'm not in favour of that. Like, go back to, and I see how with farming systems and where it's been in place for a long time, it has a role to play in Austria, but they're a very different farming system in that their farms are a lot smaller as well. That's just an example of one country that has it. But if you look at on the broader point around the 31 recommendations in this report, absolutely don't point to a silver bullet of that one intervention being able to fix everything. And the point around the pension point is, what about the farmer that doesn't have that identified successor? The farmer who's trying to encourage nieces or nephews to consider taking over the farm. To say that they can't get their single farm payment when they reach pension age or vice versa around the pension, but they actively want to have a successor and don't have one, that'll be very hard on them as well.
I'd like to move on to the tillage sector. While most other sectors are enjoying good prices, tillage farmers are not getting what they consider a good price for their grain. AgriLand editor Stella Meehan, who was on stage with me, told the meeting how bad things were for tillage farmers before we heard from some grain producers.
Tillage is one of the sectors that's sort of bucking the trend over the last 12 months, and it is struggling and it is in crisis, and it's an area that the government has to look at, because if we want to reach sustainability goals, which the government ad nauseum tells us we're trying to reach our sustainability goals, there's no more sustainable a sector in agriculture than tillage, as Pat had attested to. So, you know, they either put their money where their mouth is or they stop talking.
Tillage is the poor one of the big sectors. Principally, I think, because the inputs are just so high. We were getting the same price for grain 30 years ago as we are today.
Will you still be in tillage in 3 or 4 years' time?
I feel we're being squeezed out.
Input costs are too expensive for the tillage, and that's where the whole problem is.
And without a reduction of your input costs or an increase in what you're getting for your grain, are you still going to be doing this 5 years from now?
Probably just on a smaller base, just for use, for my own use rather than for sale. It doesn't pay you to sell grain at less than €200, like.
And yet we have all of these ambitious expansion targets for tillage, but how many years are you doing this?
About 25.
And you can't make it pay?
No, it doesn't pay.
Lots of people either leaving or downsizing in that sector. And the largest IFA meeting in recent history of tillage farmers took place just down the road from you. 300 unable to get in the door of the Killeshee Hotel. It was so packed. That's not good.
I know. I was on the stage for 2.5 hours of a very character building evening. But look, I wasn't surprised that evening at the strength of feeling in the room or the size of the attendance. And the tillage sector is a sector that wouldn't normally mobilise like that, and historically wouldn't have been at meetings screaming for a payment.
What do you mind to do for them?
So look, I think it was very clear from that, and I've known this for some time. The tillage sector, and I come from an area where there's a lot of tillage as well. I know this from my neighbours. It's had 3 really bad years in a row, which is very, very difficult. World grain prices are very low, and there's a lot of contributing factors to that, geopolitical ones that are outside of our control where we are. And then, as has been outlined there, input costs and different measures there. So the very clear ask is for a financial support as part of the budget.
That's per hectare payment. How much do you think you're going to get?
So I'm in my budget negotiations at the minute, and tillage is a clear priority for me. And I've stated that it is a sector where, you know, we want to encourage farmers who did put ploughed ground or put seed in the ground this year to continue to do that. But the meeting, in fairness, moved on from just the financial discussion, and I'm not going to preempt my budget negotiations. They're not finalised, and it's a fraught time to be negotiating.
But there will be a payment for tillage farmers.
Oh, I can't make any commitment until the 7th of October. I'll be judged on the 7th of October in terms of supporting the sector financially. But that is short-term confidence.
All right.
What came across clearly, the meeting spent a lot of time talking about how we can better support the use of natural Irish grains,
as opposed to the 6 million tons that we're importing.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, how we monetize that for farmers in terms of our co-ops being able to sell that on to the food companies, that has a lower carbon footprint. Chagas showed me, you know, our native grains that were 7.5% better from an emissions perspective than to be using imported grains. We're not self-sufficient in grain, but we do have a strong ambition, as was outlined there, across government, to increase the tillage area it's stable. It was stable from last year. I want to make sure it doesn't drop, because if tillage ground goes back into grass, we know it's very unlikely to come back.
Will you have your work cut out for you after, well, the people that we were talking to there, the number that indicated that they were going to get out of tillage and into something else? Naturally, there was a lot of farmers very tired about the uncertainty of whether there will or there won't be a derogation on the spreading of nitrates next year.
I am in derogation, yeah.
Come January of next year, do you think we will still have a nitrates derogation?
Sure, that's the point. Like, as a dairy farmer, we don't know. Will I do up the milking parlour? Will I invest 100,000 in slurry storage, etc., etc.? So we don't know, because we don't know what the future is. Is there any other industry that's faced that kind of a dilemma with absolutely so much uncertainty? And basically, we're playing against the wind.
Let's see if we can't stir the pot a little bit here. Losing the derogation is not actually necessarily going to improve water quality. What would improve water quality is all of the fellas out spreading slurry during the closed season. And we all know who they are. Who wants to be the first person to grab that thorn? Not one of you. Come on. Pat O'Toole, am I right or am I wrong?
Of course you're right. Small number of bad actors do untold damage to the reputation and the credibility of the sector. To be frank, the department spent far too long wagging their fingers at those farmers and not doing anything, and the majority of farmers were frustrated at that. While we have what I call the persecution of the compliant, where the department continually ratchet up the regulations on the people who are complying with the regulations that are in place, rather than trying to confront the problem by ratcheting up the regulation on the people who are obeying the rules, tackle the minority who are flouting the rules, and then see where we are.
Pat O'Toole, political editor of the Farmers' Journal there, Minister. The point is, had you and your predecessors done more about those who farm illegally rather than burdening those who farm legally, then we might not be where we are now.
I think it's important to say that that's not widespread practice. And I make absolutely happily would say here, I'm happy for the full weight of the law and full power to come down on anybody who's in breach. But that is not common practice, in fairness to farmers. You know, and if you talk about the nitrates derogation, our derogation farmers are actually operating at a higher level of compliance. They sign up to extra conditionality than around water quality and different measures there. And they have been having a really big impact in ways by increasing slurry storage, adoption of low emission slurry spreading. And this week with my colleague, Minister John Cummins, delighted to be able to confirm that we will have planning exemptions on increased slurry storage brought in, which was a commitment in the programme for government as well.
Which is meaningful for the people who want to do it properly and don't want to spread during the
Which is the vast majority of farmers. I would say to you, in terms of following on from the conversation around generation renewal as well, the certainty is a key issue here. So look, I met with senior officials. I worked all summer in relation to retaining the nitrates derogation. Met with senior officials.
The problem for you there, though, Minister, is that the EPA water quality stats that came out during the course of the week make the argument on retaining the derogation something of a losing argument, don't they?
So no, like there are fluctuations, as we know, in water quality, and it is very much a given moment in time. It is disappointing that the gains and the improvements of last year weren't built upon this year. If you consider it marginally higher than 2022, but it's still better than 2023.
Basically, up and down within 6 month periods, but they're not improving overall.
Oh no, so our water quality is fourth best in Europe. You know, we have fourth the trend around pristine water quality that we have to get better. But
fourth least worst of 27 nations that are all not complying with the Water Framework Directive.
But by European standards, our water quality is good.
Nobody's is meeting the standard.
In terms of nitrogen concentrations in our rivers, it fluctuates due to the nitrogen that's available, agricultural land management, and weather patterns. And the thing about the EPA's
report...
Will
there be a derogation in January?
The thing about the EPA's report this week that's important, that was indicative for the first 6 months of this year, is that across all rivers, it had risen, not just the areas where there's a higher amount of derogation farmers. So that would very much point to weather and patterns having that impact there. I'm doing
and
everything.
The weather isn't changing in our favour. So will there be a derogation in January, do you think?
I'm doing everything I can to continue to have that derogation, to provide that certainty for farmers. Obviously, we have the issue around addressing compliance with the Habitats Directive now, as well as water quality that has been raised. I was in Copenhagen last week, met with Commissioner Hansen, my colleagues, met senior officials from Brussels in Dublin last Monday. I'm out in Brussels this Monday and Tuesday doing everything, meeting Commissioner Roswell.
So we will watch that.
Inviting space. Commissioner Roswell over later in the year, hopefully, doing everything we can to get the time and space to address those issues.
Okay. We will watch that space. Unfortunately, we have run out of time and space to deal with TB, so I think we're going to have to get you back in the course of the next couple of weeks to talk about your TB plan and how you hope to try and tackle that increasingly knotty and thorny problem. But thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks,
Agriculture Minister Martin Hayden. Let's take a break.